Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Susan Heim. She is the co-author, along with Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, for the latest book in the Chicken Soup for the Soul series titled Here Comes the Bride, 101 Stories of Love, Laughter, and Family. Susan is here to share with us some wonderful stories from the book. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm excited to have you on the show. It's been about 2.5 years since you last came on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio, so I'm very excited to have you back. And Here Comes the Bride has tons of wonderful stories. Some stories were very moving, as it truly touches the heart and moves the soul. So thank you very much for that wonderful book, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, well, I was born and raised in Michigan, and I graduated from Michigan State University there. And shortly after graduation, I moved to South Florida, and I've been in South Florida ever since then. We had the pleasure of having a tropical storm, Isaac, just visit us this past weekend. And here in South Florida, I have 4 sons. Two of them are in college, and 2 of them are twins, 8-year-old twins in third grade. And I work as a freelance editor and a writer, primarily for Chicken Soup for the Soul, as you said. And I love working on these books. They're a lot of fun to work on.
Fantastic. I know you've written a number of books for Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Please tell us, how did the relationship begin?
Well, I've actually been working on Chicken Soup for the Soul books since the late 90s. I was working at that time as a freelance editor for the first publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And at that time, I was doing that for a couple of years, and then I heard that they had a full-time position open up in their company. And so I applied for the job, and I was hired. And so that was in 2000. And I worked for them for about 4 years until I gave birth to my twin sons. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I decided to become a freelance writer again and stay home. And that was when I first got the opportunity to work as a co-author with Chicken Soup for the Soul. They were putting together a book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Twins and More. Mm-hmm. And since I had just had twin boys, it seemed like the perfect opportunity for me to jump in and start reading stories about having twins. And so that was what I did. Now, there was a little glitch in that story because as I was working on that book, Chicken Soup for the Soul acquired a new publisher. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, you know, I talked to them and told them that I had been working on this book with Chicken Soup, and they said, well, we would still love to go ahead with Twins and More. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me to continue working on the book with them, with the new publisher, and we had so much fun working on it together that I've been working on books with them ever since, and we just keep doing more and more great Chicken Soup for the Soul books together, so it's been a great experience.
Fantastic. That sounds really good. And I know you have met Jack Canfield, correct?
Yes, that's right. I met him many years ago when I was working as a full-time editor for Chicken Soup, and he came and gave a presentation to our company, and he was just wonderful, very inspirational and funny. He's a great speaker. If you ever have an opportunity to listen to him and to Mark Victor Hansen, they're just terrific.
Wonderful. So how did Here Comes the Bride come about?
Well, over the years, we often get stories about weddings and engagements and falling in love. You know, for instance, we might be doing a book called Mothers and Daughters, but the story will tell about how a mother and daughter planned their wedding together. And, you know, so we really see this a lot. I think, you know, getting married is one of the most memorable events in a person's life, of course. You know, it's something mm-hmm. you always remember. But it's also, being that it's usually a big event, it's also a perfect opportunity for things to happen, you know, for for reunions to happen, for things to go wrong, for, you know, for touching moments, for just about anything to happen. And so it's a perfect forum for building stories and building memories. And so even though we had done Chicken Soup for the Soul, had actually done a book for brides more than 8 years ago, we really felt after seeing the stories that we were receiving that it was time to revisit the subject again. You know, we just seen so many great stories, and we knew there were a lot more themes coming up, you know, that were new. For example, like planning a wedding on a budget, you know, which nowadays with the economic situation, a lot more people are trying to save money rather than having the big elaborate wedding. So we really wanted to reflect themes like that, you know, and do a whole new book on getting married.
It's very interesting because I do know that in reading the book, I realized that it's a team event, because you have just about everybody on your side of the family that's involved. And then collectively, it's very interesting because I do see a lot of the in-laws being involved as well, and especially the mother-in-laws and so forth, so which kind of changes the dynamics a little bit and the energy a little bit, but it's very, very exciting. What would you like for your readers to gain from reading the book?
Well, I think after reading the stories, you really come away realizing that can't have perfection in anything like this. Like you said, you have a lot of people coming together. They're all from different backgrounds. They have different ways of thinking, different ways of doing things. And normally everyone's going to have an opinion, you know, on how you should have the perfect wedding. And so I think after reading this book, I really want people to realize, especially if they're planning a wedding, to just let go of that desire for perfection. You know, it's do the best you can. Don't expect things to be perfect, because you are going to be disappointed and things are going to go wrong. And I think that we'll find, as we talk about some of these stories today, that those things that do go wrong turn out to be some of our best memories and the things we really remember with more pleasure and humor as the years go on.
Right, that's very true. Well, I have selected several stories on the various categories as points for our discussion this morning. As I highlight the various chapters, can you please give us a short rundown of each author and their wonderful stories?
Certainly, that would be great.
Okay, great. So let us start by the first section of the book called The Proposal. And you have tons of wonderful stories in there, and I've sort of selected four that I felt which is kind of unique and really, really touch the heart. And the first one is A Perfect Proposal by Dallas Nicole Woodburn. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Okay. Well, Dallas is a short story writer, so she's a wonderful writer. And she told us about her story for what we were just discussing, her quest for perfection. And in this case, she had always dreamed of having the perfect marriage proposal. She'd been talking to her parents and to her grandparents, and they, you know, they said, oh, they didn't really remember much about their proposal. You know, they just kind of knew who they wanted to marry, and they just sort of fell into marriage, you know, and Dallas thought, oh, God, that is so unromantic. You know, I really want a romantic proposal, and I hope, you know, my boyfriend will do it right and do something spectacular for me. Well, it turns out when she did get engaged to her boyfriend, you know, it was a sweet proposal, but, you know, there were no fireworks, no getting on his knees. He didn't bring in a marching band or anything like that. But, you know, she realized that after it happened, she realized, you know, he is the one, and this really was the perfect proposal for me, because a perfect proposal really just means finding the right person. It's not the bells and whistles. It's you know, finding the right person that you want to share your life with. So this is a lovely story, I thought.
Wonderful. How about A Case of Cold Feet? I thought this is great simply because it's written from the guy's perspective, John Buentello.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I love this story because, like you said, most of the stories are, and this is for Chicken Soup in general, we do tend to get more stories from women. And this is wonderful because this guy is extremely persistent. This is a guy who decides to date a single mother, and this single mother has been burned. You know, she's mm-hmm. decided she doesn't want to have anything to do with men. She never wants to get married again. You know, she'll date, but she doesn't want to get married. Unfortunately, John doesn't take no for an answer. You know, he's mm-hmm. just determined he's going to get this girl, Anne, to marry him. And so he asks her to marry him, and she says, you know, John, you know, I love you, but no. You know, I already told you we're not going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most guys would say, okay, you know, whatever, they move on or decide to accept it, but not John. John keeps asking her over and over and over again. You know, whenever he feels the move to propose, he proposes to her. And, you know, she very patiently turns him down every time until finally, you know, she's had enough. And she says, look, John, you know, I think we just need to split up here because you're not getting the message here, you know. And so finally John gets the message. You know, they split up, go their separate ways. And a couple of months later, Anne leaves a note for him and asks him to meet her. And so he's, you know, he's kind of afraid of getting burned again, but he decides to go and meet up with her. And what she tells him is, she said, all I needed to know was what it felt like not to have you in my life. She said, now I know, and would you please ask me to marry you again? And so this time she's ready. You know, he asked her to marry him, and they live happily ever after. So it's a great story, like you said.
It's a wonderful story. It really is. And the uniqueness about it is that I think there'll be men in line to date this girl because men don't want commitments.
That's right. Yeah, usually it's the other way around. It's the man who doesn't want to commit, right?
Right, right.
That's true.
So I thought that the story was just wonderful because there are wonderful romantic men out there who believes in the sanctimonious event of marriage and so forth. So that's
mm-hmm,
wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The third one is Hello, My Name is Clueless by Kathleen Basie, I believe. I hope I pronounced the name correctly.
I think that's correct, yes. She's actually a humor writer as mm-hmm. well as a musician and a choir director, so she's got a really interesting background.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells a very funny story about how she and her boyfriend are heading to church together. She's going to do the singing, and her boyfriend plays the piano in church. And they're both really grumpy that day. They're driving to church, and she feels like she's coming down with a cold, and she's worried about whether or not she'll be able to do her solos. And her boyfriend is uncharacteristically, you know, kind of grouchy too. And so they get to the church, you know, and the service starts, and suddenly strange things start happening. You know, her boyfriend jumps up and sets up a video camera, and she's thinking, I didn't think that was part of the service, but okay, you know. And then things go along, and she looks out into the congregation, and she sees her mother sitting in the church, and then she's really thinking this is strange because her mother lives quite a distance away, so she doesn't normally go to this church. And so, you know, she's trying to figure out what's going on. She's totally, as the title says, totally clueless about what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly the priest at some point says that her boyfriend wants to come up to the front of the church and say something to the congregation. And so he goes up to the front of the church, and normally he's a pretty good speaker. He's used to performing in public, but he's just a mess. You know, his speech is terrible. He's all nervous. He's fumbling and everything, and Kathleen's all embarrassed, going, oh, you know, please stop. And then suddenly he calls her up to the stage with him. And when he does that, she goes up there, he gets down on one knee, and he proposes to her in front of the whole congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, everybody starts cheering, and, you know, it was a great moment that he decided to share with the whole church that they belong to. And I thought there was a cute touch at the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
The author shares how whenever she goes out in public now, you know, I guess it's probably a pretty small town, she said, whenever she goes out in public now, somebody always seems to stop her and say, hey, I was there when you got engaged. So
Memorable experiences and so forth. And this last proposal that I selected, which I thought was totally unique, which is wonderful, I need you to tell us the story. It's by Matali Roos, and her story is titled Liftoff.
Yes, this is a perfect example of what I would call a non-traditional proposal. You know, it's mm-hmm. not your standard wine and roses kind of proposal. And the author is actually a medical doctor, but when she grew up, she lived in Houston, and she was only about a mile from NASA, and so her and her family would go to NASA quite a bit, and so she always dreamed of being an astronaut. You know, she always thought it would be cool to go up in space, and so she always had this dream, but when she grew up, she got a little more practical and, you know, decided to go to med school, but... One year, she and her boyfriend decided to take a little vacation. She was working in a clinic at the time, but they took a little trip to a Caribbean island off the coast of Honduras. And since she was so busy at the time, she let her boyfriend plan their little trip. You know, she really didn't know what to expect. And when they were there, he took her to a deep-sea exploration institute and told her that he had chartered a submarine for them to go into and go underwater and ride in the submarine. And so when they were together in underneath the water, you know, it's all dark in there. They turn out all the lights, and then they pass a group of bioluminescent fish that glow in the dark. And she started to realize, hey, this is probably a lot what it's like to be in space. You know, this is really mm-hmm. an astronaut mm-hmm. experience for me, because it feels like we're under the stars in the dark, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, to top off this wonderful experience that her boyfriend had planned for her, there's a reason why this chapter is called The Proposal. He popped the question to her, you know, and they became engaged, you know, in the submarine underwater. So I thought that was really sweet, and I loved how the boyfriend especially tailored this to this dream that she had always
right.
had. You know, he combined the two things of not only getting engaged, but also trying to make her dream come true to go into space. So
right.
Very sweet.
Hey, we men listen too now, you know. I mean, in between half times and timeouts, you know, we do listen.
Well, she must have mentioned it at a good time, you know, when he wasn't watching a football game or something, you know, what she had always dreamed of. So.
So please tell us about your proposal.
Oh, well, mine is not quite as exciting as going down in a submarine, but my proposal actually took place on Mother's Day, which mm-hmm. you wouldn't think was a typical day for a proposal.
Uh-huh.
But the reason it took place on Mother's Day was because I was a single mother. I had two boys at the time. Mm-hmm. And so my husband-to-be wanted to involve both of my boys in the proposal as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so he made sure the boys were in the room with me on Mother's Day. And instead of, you know, celebrating the day I became a mother, we celebrated the day that I got engaged, because he presented me a ring, you know, in front of the boys, and asked all three of us to marry him, you know. And so that was really nice. You know, he was recognizing that he was marrying the whole family and not just me, and really getting the boys involved and excited about it.
That's a wonderful story, because in terms of rewriting a new memory for a specific date, it reminds you of something, whether it's good or bad, and not necessarily being a mother bad, but it's just that, okay, let's rewrite the story a little bit as we move forward, which is beautifully done, and it's fairly romantic. And then in the course of you telling us what you just did, I just realized that him not being wanting to get the short end of the stick here, you guys have twin sons, so he's even the equation.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. We went on to have two more sons. So.
That's wonderful. See, now you see all the boats are even, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this now gives him something to celebrate on Mother's Day, too. It's not just a day for me, you know, it's a
right.
day for all of us,
right.
the day we became a family. So that's funny.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Section two of the book is just simply titled The Ring. And I had a couple of stories that I thought was very, very nice, and it's very, very touching. And the first one is pretty much like what you had just mentioned. I wanted you to tell this story because this is a beautiful story, A Tiny Ring by Laurie Bryant.
Yes, I love this story for the same reason that you just mentioned, that it kind of mirrors my proposal story in that it involves a single mother, and her, this time she has a daughter. And what happens is when she met her husband, she was a poor, you know, single mom working two jobs to support her child, and they dated for about 4 years and decided to get married. And you know, Bob was very excited to marry her, but he was also kind of worried, you know, about taking on the role of a father. You know, like my husband to be, he had never been a father before, and he was kind of asking himself if he was really up to the task of being a father. And so he decided that, you know, in order to help prepare not only his future daughter but himself for the event, he kind of wanted to make a little ritual or a special event or memento of what was about to happen. So what he did was he bought a little ring, a little miniature ring for the daughter, and he wrote up some special vows, basically committing himself to the daughter to be, you know, as her new father. And then when they got married, after he, you know, presented the ring and the vows to his wife, he then got down on his knees to his daughter and gave her the little ring and said the vows to her. And so everybody at the wedding there witnessed, you know, him committing not only to his future wife, but also to the daughter. And, you know, everybody said it was just such a touching moment. They all had tears in their eyes because it was such a lovely gesture of him to do that for the daughter. And they've been married 24 years now, and they still celebrate once a year. All three of them celebrate their anniversary together, you know, as the three of them.
That's just wonderful. Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize this. I think back about a year or so or two, the nuclear family in the United States is getting less and less, and for the first time, the blended family in the United States have superseded the nuclear family in the United States, I think, within the last couple of years or so. And having an opportunity to have stories like this to tell people that, hey, you know, it can work having blended family, and it just depends on each other's commitment, because you are marrying the entire family, and you need to know that.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. And you really learn that after the wedding, you know, after when you're actually living together and everyone is, you know, adjusting to each other in a new family and a new way of doing things. And it's great to at least get that great start off, you know, of having a wonderful wedding and proposal that you've all shared together, as many of these stories demonstrated.
Right. And the next story is an unconditional proposal by Christy Cocciarella Fitzgerald. And I thought this was very romantic, very unique, and it's truly from the heart, which is fascinating. So tell us a little bit about this story.
It is. This is another story about a couple who don't have a lot of money. They're very poor. And her boyfriend, in fact, he's a college student when he proposes. And he's so poor that he can't even afford an engagement ring for her, you know, a proper diamond engagement ring. And so he sounds like quite a creative fellow, because what he does is he goes to the store and he buys, you know, a cheap diamond-shaped crystal and some wire and some gold spray paint, and he goes into his workshop and he basically creates a ring out of this wire and spray paint and a crystal. And that's what he presents to his fiance when he asks her to marry him. And you know, of course she's just thrilled that he's asked her to marry him, and she's very happy with the ring, and you know, doesn't seem to mind that it's made out of cheap wire, that their wedding is very simple and you know, nothing too fancy. So 6 years later, after they get married, they've been married about 6 years, and the husband, you know, at that point, they're much more financially secure. You know, they've graduated from college and have jobs. And so her husband suggests that they get married again. Mm-hmm. And so this time they have the proper wedding and, you know, spend a little more money, gets her a real ring, and they have a great time then. But what I really liked about it was, you know, at the end of the story, she tells you that they've actually been married 20 years now.
Right.
But she still keeps that little wire ring hanging from a ribbon from her rearview mirror in the car, you know. And, of course, anytime somebody comes to ride in her car, they see that ring hanging there and ask her what it is. And she still loves to tell the story about how her husband handmade her first engagement ring.
Right. And that's just a beautiful story, because that tells you that true love does exist.
It does. It does. You know, for those of you, you men who think that you have to get the expensive giant rock, you know, to impress her that that's what she wants, you know, I think it's sweet that, you know, this girl was perfectly happy with this homemade ring. And, you know, if anything, it was even more meaningful because she went to such an effort to actually try and create something, you know, that she would always remember. So.
Well, it is from the heart, and I think that's the uniqueness of it, because you do find two people right here that are really connected from a soulmate standpoint, because she realized the innate value in what he did and the fact that she loves him enough to know that, rather than having this sort of a mental picture where it should be this way, it should be this cut, it should be about this high, this carat weight, and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I'm sure she would have loved a ring like that, but, you know, what was more important to her was getting the man she wanted, not getting the ring, you know.
Right. A wonderful story. The next section is called Simply the Dress, and there are some wonderful stories about that, and I know how important it is for the bride to get the right dress and everything else, but there are two stories that kind of stood out, which I thought was kind of interesting. And it really speaks from the heart. The first one is A Real Piece of Me by Val Mueller.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what this story is really about is something we had talked about a little bit earlier, and that was about how you really can't please everybody, how all the relatives are going to chime in and have a preference for what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And so this is a story about that. This woman is, you know, she's pretty easygoing kind of person, and she kind of lets her relatives take things over. You know, she doesn't put up too much of a fuss when her fiance rejects with the color she wanted for the wedding, and her in-laws reject the location where she wanted to have the wedding, and her parents take over and choose the menu, and even her sister's chiming in and telling her what kind of dress she should get and what kind of, you know, what things she should pick. And so, you know, she finally gets to a point where, okay, she's going to let everybody do these things, but she's going to take control of one thing, and that is her dress. I mean, that's the most important thing to her. She has a special dress in mind, and so she decides that she is going to create and make her own dress. And, of course, you know, all of her relatives are appalled at her decision that she's going to sew her own dress, you know. They don't see that as being part of the perfect wedding, a handmade dress. But you know, she just decides that she's going to let them do their own thing on the other stuff, but she's going to do her own dress. And so she does. She's very inspired by the Lord of the Rings movie and sees a dress in there that she loves, and she designs her own dress. And whenever she gets stressed out, you know, about the wedding, she goes into her sewing room and starts working and sewing on her dress. And, you know, the dress turns out beautifully. You know, it's definitely unique, but it's something that everybody is talking about, you know, years from them, you know, years away from the wedding. And she's thrilled because she had something of her own, something that she had created that was, you know, not something imposed on her by everybody else. So it worked out well for everybody.
Very true. I mean, it's a nice touch of a personal self in a situation like that where everybody else is pitching in, and if you don't pitch in, then you're out of the loop, so to speak.
Right.
The second story is The Perfect Dress by Lava Mueller, and they are not related because this Mueller is spelled Mueller. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, it's just coincidental that they had two similar sounding names.
Yes.
That's right. And this story, too, again, is about a woman who her dress is important to her. This is she and her husband, in fact, are so poor that at the time they become engaged, they're actually living in a cabin with no electricity and no running water. You know, that's how poor they are. And so, you know, Lava, the author, accepts that, you know, they're not going to have a lot of money to spend on the wedding. But her dream has always been to have the dress of her dreams, and she says, you know what, if I'm going to splurge on one thing, it's going to be my dress. And so what she does is she goes around town and picks out, you know, decides on the features that she wants for her dress, and then she goes to a seamstress in town and asks her to design and sew up the dress for her. And so they order this beautiful fabric for the dress. It's called Snowdrop White. And so when they go, when the fabric arrives, they go to pick it up. She's with her mother-in-law at the time, and they go, they open the box, and they notice on the side of the box it says banana. And she's thinking, why does it say banana on the side of my Snowdrop White Snowdrop White fabric box? Well, we soon find out the reason is she opens the box, looks at the fabric, and it is indeed a yellowish banana color. It's kind of a golden colored fabric. And at first she's mortified, you know, oh my God, it's ruined, you know, my dress. And she doesn't have time to reorder the fabric because, they got to make the dress right away and get it ready for the wedding. But as they're looking at it more and more, they start to realize, they hold the fabric up to her, and they start to realize that this yellowish fabric is actually better for her skin tone. It's a better fit for her. It looks really nice on her. Mm-hmm. And so they do end up having the wedding dress made out of banana silk. And it's gorgeous, you know. So it's, you know, this is another one of those examples of, you know, what initially appears to be a horrible mishap turns out to be a wonderful memory, because everybody always remembers that, oh yeah, she got married in that yellow dress. And even her daughter now says that when she gets married, she wants to wear her mother's banana dress. So, you know, it turned out to be a great thing that made her day even more special than she had anticipated.
Right, right. And that's a beautiful story, because the color actually gave her that wonderful glow when she walks down the aisle and so forth. So that's a wonderful story. The next section is called It's All in the Planning. And again, there are some wonderful stories here. I picked out a couple of stories that I thought that kind of unique, and it really, really touched the heart. One is My Husband, the Wedding Planner by Victoria Gotham.
Yes. Now, this story is unique because I think in most traditional weddings, typically, you know, you see the bride usually is the one doing the planning. You know, whatever gets done for the wedding is more important to her. Usually the groom kind of, you know, he's there for approval or to, you know, tag along, but you know, he really doesn't do as much of the decision-making because they don't tend to be, you know, they don't tend to care about it as much as the girl does. So, but in this particular story, the husband is very, really does want a big wedding. He comes from one of those families where they have three-day celebrations and everybody they know comes to celebrate their wedding. And so he's very excited about it. And so his fiance says, you know, if you want the big wedding, you know, go ahead and plan it, but I don't want anything to do with it. And so she even tries to discourage him along the way, even though she gives him permission. She makes him go out to dinner with a couple that she knows that has a terrible experience with their wedding where everybody was fighting and things went wrong. And she's hoping that if he hears the story from this other couple that he will, you know, change his mind and decide to go along with the elopement. But that doesn't work, you know. It doesn't work. He goes ahead and does the and plans out the wedding, and of course it turns out beautifully. You know, she has a great time and really enjoys the wedding, and she really comes to realize that it wasn't so much that you know, that he wanted a big gaudy wedding. It was more just that he felt it was important to have something really symbolic and grand, you know, that would honor their union together. And so it was beautiful for that reason, that he really wanted to make this big gesture for her, you know, to do something really special for their wedding and the fact that they were together.
That's a wonderful story. And, of course, the next one is very interesting because it is about taking it inward between the two of them, this wonderful couple. And the title of her story is Nothing Changed This Love by Julie Turner.
Yes, this story was unique because it was the only story I found from the ones we received about a couple who are actually trying to find their song. You know, a lot of couples have a very special song that means a lot to them. It might be the song they heard on their first date or the first time they danced together or the song that was playing when they proposed or something like that. And so the author, Julie, is kind of disappointed because her and her fiancé don't really have a special song that they can dance together you know, when they get married. And so they go on this quest to get the perfect song. And unfortunately, they both tend to have very different musical tastes. So that makes it a lot more difficult to come up with something. So they come up with this plan where they're going to, every night, they're going to get together and start playing songs and dancing and just see if something feels right, you know. So they dance from everything from the Beach Boys to Michael Bublé to, you know, just about everything. And you know, so they argue over a lot of the songs, but they also, you know, build some great memories. You know, she realizes that her boyfriend is quite a good dancer, you know, quite much better than she even knew mm-hmm. that he was. And in the whole process, they do finally decide on a song, and the song is called Nothing Can Change This Love. And they liked, you know, not only was it perfect for, you know, perfect tempo to mm-hmm. please both mm-hmm. of them, but it also, the title really expressed how they felt about each other. So that was a nice story.
Yeah, very nice story. The next section is Meet the Parents. And I only have one story that I wanted to focus on. Of course, all the stories are all wonderful, but I think Hollywood made a wonderful movie on that with Meet the Fockers and so forth. We don't need to go too far. But this one particular story I thought is really wonderful, and it's titled Our Day by April Taylor Fetch.
Yes, yes. This story takes a little different turn from that right. from that movie, and this was actually one of the most touching stories in the book. This one really made me cry. It's told by an elementary school teacher, and she tells about how her mother and she had always dreamed about planning her wedding together. And when she becomes engaged, you know, that's what they do. She and her mother are all excited, and they call it their wedding. You know, they're planning it. And then all of a sudden her mother is diagnosed with cancer. And unfortunately, it's a very bad diagnosis. The cancer is terminal, and her mother starts going downhill quickly. And suddenly the goal becomes not just to plan the perfect wedding, but just to keep mom alive until the ceremony, you know, to get there. And so... you know, as they go along, that unfortunately her mother, it keeps getting worse and worse, and they realize that she might not be around for the wedding. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is the daughter goes and talks to the priest and asks him if he would consider moving up the wedding date and actually having the wedding in her mother's room, you know, where she's confined mm-hmm. to her bed. And so she tells her mother her plans, and her mother feels terrible, of course, because she wanted her daughter to have this big, beautiful wedding, but as soon as the daughter agrees that she will go ahead with the big wedding later, you know, that she just wants mm-hmm. to do the smaller ceremony now, she agrees to do that. And so that's what they do. They all meet in her mother's living room where she's in her hospital bed, and they have a ceremony, and they make toasts and take pictures and have a wedding cake, and they create a wonderful wedding for her mother. And 2 weeks later, you know, or 2 days later, actually, the mother passed away. But, you know, she couldn't stop talking for those 2 days before she died about what a wonderful wedding her daughter had and how she was so happy that she got to see her daughter get married before she died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful story, I think. Very beautiful story.
Yes, it is. It's lovely, and it's wonderful that, you know, that she did that for her mother to create that one last memory for her, you know, of her daughter, of the happiest day of her daughter's life.
Yeah, and for both of them in that case, because knowing something very special of that nature to happen, and it's just beautiful. It's a very touching story. There are many other sections in the book. I thought they were just all wonderful, but I zeroed in one of the sections that I thought, which is really very interesting, because as you know, more and more baby boomers are getting divorced these days. And then there are a lot of people that are in the 30s and 40s are basically single parents or divorced and having second chances in love. And you have a wonderful section here called Never Too Late for Love. And they have so many wonderful stories, but I have narrowed it down to about five or six or so. And I want us to touch each of every one of them if we could, because they are just wonderful stories about how people have second chances in life for love. And the first one is One Fine Day by Anna Lee Davis.
Yes, this was a wonderful story. It's actually told by a woman who is also an ordained minister. And like many people who go through a divorce, she'd had some rough years. Her husband left her after 20 years of marriage, and she was alone for 12 years after that. And so now she's in her 50s, and she's terrified at the thought of dating. You know, she really doesn't want to go through that experience, and so she's pretty much resigned herself to being alone for the rest of her life. But then she happens to meet a man at church. His name is Joel, and he's one of the musicians at her church. He's older like she is. He's been through a divorce. And he often comes over to her house during the week with the other musicians so that they can prepare for the Sunday service that she presides at. And so she and Joel get to know each other. He'll often stay after practice to talk to her, and they, you know, they find out that they have a lot in common and that they feel the same way for each other. And suddenly she, you know, she's starting to have romantic feelings toward him despite her hesitancy to do so. And one afternoon she's scheduled to go to the opera to go see Madame Butterfly with some friends in New York City. And her friends cancel their plans. They bow out of it. And so she's, you know, telling Joel, the young man, how disappointed she is that she can't go to the opera. And suddenly she finds herself asking him to go with her instead. And so despite never having seen an opera before, he agrees to go with her to the theater. And they have a wonderful time. And, in fact, they have such a wonderful time that after they leave the opera and get in the car together, she confesses her feelings to him. She's emboldened after all these years and tells him, you know, she's been having feelings for him. And he tells her the same thing, that he, you know, he's been feeling the same way and fighting it. And they agree that they want to get married. So she goes, you know, through all these years, this whole process, she goes from not knowing anybody to suddenly becoming engaged, you know, in one evening. And 6 months later, they get married, and, you know, they get married in the afternoon, and they celebrate by going to the opera together that evening because that was the site of their first date. So it's just a lovely, lovely story about finding somebody when you least expect it to happen.
Right, very true. And the next one, it's just such another beautiful, touching story that really touched the heart and moved the soul. Pink Hibiscus by Shelley Blagey Linton.
Yes, this is one of the more, as you said, touching stories. It's a sad story, but it's also very sweet because I think it's a story about hope. It's about a woman who is alone. She's 40 years old, single, you know, never married, and she's diagnosed with cancer. And so she's going through a very rough time, and the only thing that really brings her joy during this period is whenever she sees her favorite flower, which happens to be the hibiscus flower. And so fortunately she recovers from cancer, and 4 years later she falls in love with a Jamaican man who had admired a picture that she had of the hibiscus flower, and that was kind of the attraction that drew them together. And so she's happy to be through her ordeal and engaged to this man when suddenly her father is diagnosed with cancer. And then to top things off, 4 months later, her boyfriend, her fiancé, is also diagnosed with cancer. So it, you know, it's a very sad story because now you have three people here trying to find happiness, she and her boyfriend and her husband, and they've all been affected by cancer. And, you know, again, she talks about how the sight of the hibiscus flower really gives them hope and brings them joy despite all the pain that they're going through. And fortunately, by the end of the story, we find that all three of them do make it through their treatment, their cancer treatment, and recover. And, you know, her dad walks her down the aisle at her wedding, and her engagement photos are taken with the hibiscus flower tucked behind her ear. And it's just a wonderful story of survival and hope and getting through hard times that, you know, there is something better on the other side of going through something as tough as, you know, a cancer diagnosis or something similar to that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. And the third one was sent in actually by the daughter of the bride. And this is another wonderful story. Better Than Prince Charming by Stephanie McKellar.
Yes, this is a very unique story because it's actually written by a girl who was 17 years old at the time she wrote the story. She's now starting college this fall. And it's a story about her mother, who never really had very good luck with men. You know, her mother's been a single mom to her and her brother for many years. And she's done some dating and relationships, but, you know, nobody was really good enough for her mom. And so Stephanie is kind of unique in that she really wants her mom to be happy. She wants her to settle down and find somebody special. And so one day her mother meets this guy named Jody, and he's finally the one, you know. He treats everybody beautifully. He's, you know, he's a wonderful guy, and they finally realize that her mom's found the perfect person. Mm-hmm. And they realize this even more when he decides to ask her and her brother to propose to her mother. And what they do is they go over to their aunt's house and they decorate the lawn with a big sign that says, Denise, that's her mother's name, Denise, will you marry me? And they put it in the lawn. And then Jody, the boyfriend, hires a helicopter and takes the mother up in the helicopter, and they fly over the lawn, of course, and she sees a sign that says, will you marry me? This could have been in the unconventional proposal chapter as well, because, you know, she sees a sign, and her kids are jumping up and down at the side of the lawn, you know, and she sees that he wants to marry her and get married. So that was, it's just a really lovely story, again, about as we discussed, you know, blending a family together and getting everybody involved in the whole process and really building a family, you know, not just a couple, but everybody together.
I thought it was just a charming, beautiful story about it's a family event.
Exactly. And I love that the 17-year-old daughter wrote the story, you know, that she was so excited that her mom was finally finding happiness and she could go off to college with knowing that her mom is happy and secure with her new husband. So
That's right.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And the next one is just a wonderful, beautiful story. It's one of those things that you're talking about rewriting new memories and so forth. And the title of this story is A Senior Bride and Her Wedding by Francine Baldwin Billingshire.
Yes, this story is actually written by a grandmother. And again, like many women who have been through divorce and tough times, she's one of those women who swore she'd never marry again. You know, she wanted to be alone the rest of her life. Well, unfortunately, at her office where she worked, she had this coworker who decided differently. You know, he had been pursuing her for years and kept asking her to go out with him. And, you know, she thought he was nice, but she just didn't want to have anything to do with relationships, and so she kept turning him down. And this went on for about 3 years until she, all of a sudden one day, she decided, you know what, you know, I think my broken heart is finally mended, and I'm kind of ready, you know, to go out here and start dating. And so, of course, you know, as soon as she hopes her coworker will ask her out, he doesn't, you know. It takes a while. But, you know, he must have gotten the message after all this time. But finally, he decides to ask her to go fishing with him. So she's thinking, well, it's not exactly what I had in mind, but okay, you know, I'll go fishing with them. And so they go fishing, and she catches her very first fish and has a wonderful time. And but even then, you know, they go out, they end up dating, but they date for 10 more years before they even talk about marriage. You know, this is a long, slow process. And, you know, after 10 years, he decides to ask her to marry him, and so she decides to play a little trick on him, and they go to the ring store, and she picks out the most expensive ring that's there just to see what he'll say, you know, just kind of to test his commitment. So, you know, they leave the store, but finally he, you know, he does ask her to marry him. He presents her the ring, the expensive ring, the nice ring that she had picked out, and they decide to get married on Valentine's Day, which was the day that she had actually been a sad day for her previously, because she had been diagnosed with breast cancer many years ago on Valentine's Day. And so they decided to create a happy memory. We talked about this topic before. They decided to turn Valentine's Day into a happy memory by getting married on that day. And so that's what they did. So many years later, this woman found love, you know, after all she had been through. It's a very sweet and wonderful story.
It's a wonderful spiritual-driven story, and I like it very much, and that's one of the reasons why I chose it. And the final one that I like under Never Too Late for Love is The Second Time Around by Sally Friedman.
Yes. In this story, she talks about actually a wedding that she attended. This is a very simple and a very sweet story, but she shares with us about how she attends the wedding of two dear old friends. And these are actually quite, you know, they sound like they're quite elderly people. She talks about their wrinkles and gray hair and pot bellies. And they'd both been lost. They were both widows, a widow and a widower, actually, who had lost beloved spouses after many years, which I thought was sweet. You know, they were introduced by friends, and it wasn't one of those cases where it was fireworks at first sight or that they were trying to find the love of their life. You know, it was just kind of a gradual dawning to them, an understanding that they had found somebody, you know, special that they wanted to spend the rest of their lives with. And so, you know, they got married very simply in their living room on a Wednesday night with friends and family gathered around, you know, everybody was in tears because it was just such a sweet moment. And at the end, she shares about how the groom said to the bride, "I'll warm your feet when they're cold, my darling," and that was that was his pledge to her, you know. And I just, when I read that story, I just thought, isn't that really what it's all about? You know, it's not about I'll buy you things or I'll do all these wonderful things for you. It's I'll keep you warm at night, and that's really what it's all about, I think.
Yeah, very true. So, do you have any advice for engaged couples?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we had talked about, you know, it was just to really make the wedding your own. You know, to not necessarily listen to conventions about what the wedding should be, or to bow to the pressure to spend a lot of money or to make this a big event. It's, you know, really when it comes down to it, your engagement and your wedding is really about the two of you. And I think, you know, I think all of these stories really demonstrate that it's important to make your wedding your own. You know, it's okay if it's different, and it's okay if it's unique or it's not conventional. It's about the two of you and the memories that you're building together and the foundation that you're setting for the marriage that you'll have together.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yes, I do. You know, I was looking at the cover of the book, and it suddenly occurred to me our subtitle here is called 101 Stories of Love, Laughter, and Family. And I think those three words really sum up a wonderful recipe for life. You know, if you have love and lots of laughter and family around you, I think you're rich and you're very blessed. And that's really what going through life is all about, is having those three things in your life.
That's wonderful. That's a beautiful recipe for living. One of the things I got from your book as well is one of the quotes that was written in by Patty Hollinger Pickett in her story, which we didn't get to. And again, there's so many wonderful stories. And of course, she has her story classified under the Never Too Late section. And the quote is from Dean Stanley that reads, "A happy marriage is a new beginning of life, a new starting point for happiness at any age." And I thought that was perfect.
It is. It's beautiful. It sums up what it's all about.
The book also talks about wedding mishaps. Do you think wedding mishaps make for even better memories?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, those really are the things that you're going to remember when everything's all said and done. And just about every wedding and every big event like this is going to have a mishap. Something is going to go wrong, and, you know, people are going to get stressed. And I think, you know, it just helps to put things into perspective that, you know, this may be a little rough right now, but down the road we're going to look back on this fondly and remember all of the things that went right and went wrong at our wedding, and how we all banded together to make it right and have a terrific day together.
That's true, very true. Well, Susan, thank you for the great recipe for living that you shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be author Charles Martin. Charles and I will be discussing about his debut novel titled Provocateur. The book explores the human experience that surrounds the age-old contest between men and women, alpha males meeting their match in an audacious young woman as she confronts powerful men in the intriguing high-life world of CEOs, yachting, and cybercrime. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. And Susan, thank you again and have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.